What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Dude, I made it here, but it was quite the journey yesterday getting here, no doubt.
We are just coming off of our fifth tour, which is starting to be kind of crazy. We officially have 32 shows under our belts. And I can't believe how quickly it's all come together. But it was almost like we had such extraordinary luck and quality throughout like the tour portion of the tour.
Right.
And it almost feel like the fates have decided that in return for all of that goodwill, it's like we are like paying like a small price upon return. And I don't know about you, but I currently like am thinking at the speed of pudding.
I hear you, man. I am. It wears you out being on the road. Like, it's super fun, and like doing the show is such a blast, and meeting everyone, it like fills my cup to the brim. It is overflowing in that department. And then also, it's like you haven't had a proper night of sleep in a consistent bed for, you know, the last 10 days. You've been traveling around, you've been sitting in the van, that's been beating you up. And it's like you don't understand how like bad sitting is for you until you've been forced to do it in a van over and over and over again.
Oh, yes.
And it's just like we planned in advance to get home on Monday and then take Tuesday off so that we could have like a full day of recovery. Just like, hey, we're good.
Yeah. Wake up in your own bed. In due course, go and just sort of like recalibrated to home life.
Just settle in.
Yeah. However, weather and other, you know, circumstances had different plans for us.
Yes.
And so, you know, we knew as of concluding our last show that in Dallas, that there was going to be like flight issues in terms of getting home. Cause you know, like we're preparing for our final show, but also checking into tomorrow's flight. When we get the notification that it's like, yeah, we can get you back to New York, but we can't get you to New York from Roanoke because tornadoes.
Yeah. We've already canceled that.
Yes. And so, you know, like then there's like a whole like rebooking process and, you know, that whole rigmarole or whatever. And it's like, boom, bam, we found something, you know, it gave us a little bit more time to wake up the next morning. We weren't going to be rushed. We're still going to get home approximately the same time. We're going to go through Atlanta this time. No big deal. You know, so then we're like sitting in the airport getting ready to board for our Atlanta flight, which we also got bumped up to first class for, which is like it felt like, okay, we had a canceled flight that caused some stress. No big deal. This is the balancing act.
Here we go.
And so I was like, hey, we're pretty like, good. You know, so the whole team, all five of us were sitting in first class and we're like, whoa, we are so fancy right now.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like as we're about to board, we get the notification that our flight from Atlanta to Roanoke has now been canceled.
Yeah. Because the issue wasn't New York. The issue was Roanoke. And there was just big storm hitting the whole East Coast. And it's like, I think I was reading about it and it's like, this is like a once in a 15-year storm. And you're like, great, great, great.
good
timing.
Good timing indeed. But you know, then all of a sudden, you know, we're like, okay, well, like, you know, we'll, it's not ideal. It's not what we're hoping for, but like let's see if we can't just like book a rental car. We'll land, we'll hop in the car, you know, we'll drive to 3 a.m. We'll still get home. We can still wake up on Tuesday.
Right.
Have the day.
We'll even be able to sleep in, you know?
Exactly.
No big deal.
Sleep in, a couch nap maybe.
Yeah, have a little nap.
Can you imagine?
You know what? Kids will be at school. Beth will be at work. Like, I'll be able to relax.
Right.
Just recover on my own.
Yes. Yes. But then because all flights were being like grounded and many of them diverted to Atlanta in particular. So we were going to Atlanta anyway, but I think other flights were being sent to Atlanta so they could land.
Yeah.
So then we show up and I mean, it's like everything to do. I mean, it felt like a holiday rush or something.
It did.
It was crazy. Yeah. Like all of a sudden getting a rental car was like the structural equivalent of getting like an Xbox for your kids for Christmas circa 2002.
Oh my gosh. Yes. You know, it was like, you know, you get there and it's like, no, there's nothing available right now. Good luck. trying the more, like, you know, the there everything at the airport's absolutely already booked. But then it's like, okay, maybe we'll try some of the rental car places just in Atlanta. But they're all closed for the day.
Yes.
So it's like now you're stuck and you have to wait until the morning where you're just sort of relying on the idea that when you wake up, the other rental car places will be like, yes, of course, we've got cars.
Like, right. Yeah. It's like we're the website is programmed to say no. The big issue is that we're driving a car from Atlanta away from Atlanta, like, and then not returning it.
Right.
And
it's a one way.
It's a one way. And that complicates things. But we're like, surely if we speak to like a human being, everything will be fine.
Yeah.
But
they'll get it.
All of this is even precluding, like, you know, other issues. So when we can't get a rental car, we miraculously get a hotel. So put a pin in that for just one second. We'll come right back to it because that has its own like almost scare attached to it. But we land in Atlanta, and one of the weird things about having like all these checked bags with like our, you know, our camera equipment, our the merchandise we travel with, you know, we're on the road for 12 days, so everybody has like, you know, a reasonably
really big suitcases,
piece of luggage. Yeah, so you know, we're waiting on I think 11
pieces of baggage.
And you know, so like we're getting ready to leave, and I go up to the, like the gate check person or whatever, and they're like, I was like, okay, so you know, if our flight from Atlanta to Roanoke is canceled, what does that mean for our luggage? Like, where does it go? Mm-hmm. And she's like, your final destination, because we canceled the flight, is just Atlanta. So you'll pick it up in Atlanta just like you normally would, as if you were going to Atlanta. And
right.
I was like, copy that.
Copy. Makes, you know, sense to me.
Exactly. You know, I was like, all right, whatever. No big deal. So, but the one small, well, I'll come back to that too, because there's so many variables involved with this. But you know, so we get to, you know, the carousel, like that has like, you know, our flight listed on it, and you know, all the bags are coming out and whatever. Like, on this one carousel, I feel like most of the time you're on a carousel that's dedicated to your flight.
To your flight. On this carousel, there was like 8 flights dedicated to it.
I think there were 13.
13.
13 flights.
And mind you, there's 10 carousels, some of which they're not even using.
Right. Yeah. So you're just like, what exactly is like, what's going on here? Like, why is it so packed? And so like the luggage, I mean, it was like the most comical thing I've ever seen, because it's dumping out onto the carousel. The carousel is so full,
right,
that luggage is just literally like skipping over the top of these like suitcases, crashing on the ground. You're just like, oh my gosh. And the thing was, is that it was like, where are all the people?
Well, they were all, I think what was happening was they were people who, what happened to us happened to them, but one stage earlier.
Oh, so right? All their stuff
connecting flight to Atlanta was canceled, but their stuff was on the plane.
I see. You're right. That's exactly what it's, because that's the thing, is that, like, you know, normally the carousel starts and, you know, sure enough, literally, I don't know how this works, but it's like the rule of law is that every single person's bag is the last one to come.
Every single person.
Right. You know, it's like, surely the first bag belongs to someone, but nobody's ever been that person, and we all know it.
We know it.
Yeah. So we're waiting. And then finally a guy comes over and he's like, hey, if you're not seeing your bag, it's probably on carousel 3 or 4. So go and check this.
Right. And we're like, that explains it.
They're going to be spinning in circles just 100 feet away.
Right.
So like, you know, we separate, you know, like we've got like two people at one and one person at the other, just making sure it doesn't randomly show up or whatever. So we're watching them. Then finally it's like, man, we've been here for like over an hour and it seems like Stuff should have shown up, right?
Like, certainly.
Yeah.
Stuff should have shown up.
So you go over to, like, you know, like one of the frantic airport employees, which, you know, goodness gracious, I don't want to know the stress involved from their perspective.
I know.
With everything they're going through. I am certain it's miserable. And you're wearing like I work at the airport shirt. And so everyone's asking you questions and everyone's confused. And there's so many of us. So I have the ultimate, you know, sympathy for the situation they were in. But sure enough, you know, we go over and the person's sort of like, you got to go get in that line. Basically, she points to a line that's like 100 people long.
Right.
You know, and this is to a desk that is attended by one person who is just frantically trying their best to reunite people with their luggage.
Right.
And I mean, it's like you walk over there and you kind of look at the people in front of you and they're kind of like, this is not good. Like,
yeah,
there's just that sheen of like, we're going to be here. It's like waiting for a roller coaster, except the roller coaster is your luggage is probably missing.
Right. And they're like telling you also, they're like, you can track your bag on the app. We're looking at the app and it's like, where?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you're just trying to figure it all out. And of course, all of our phone batteries are, you know, some amount of, you know, it's nearing midnight at this point, or probably, you know, I don't know, 10 probably 10:30.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's late. We've all been like running all day, you know, like everything's kind of going on. You're just doing your best to sort of like keep up with what's going on. And then knowing you've still got to, you know, get to the hotel. And even in our mind now, we're like, we have so much luggage. We're going to have to call like multiple Ubers in order to like fit it all. And then boy, howdy. So you're feeling the full weight of stress. Finally, we get like a notification on our phone that our bags have been, you know, like expedited back to Roanoke.
Right.
And so at this point, all any of us have is the clothes on our back and our backpacks.
Right.
You know, which for me included half a bag of beef jerky, my copy of Order of the Phoenix, and a pair of Ephedrins.
Right.
You know, so like I didn't have like my toiletries kit. I didn't have like, you know, so no toothbrush. You know, didn't have my medicine, like any of that type of stuff. You're just like, oh boy, this is going to be something. So finally we take off. We've got all of our bags. At least we can take one Uber. That's a perk.
That was. That was sort of like the irony was that we, of course, checked to see, can we get a flight to Roanoke in the morning?
Right.
And sure enough, there was one, but it's sold out, so we can't get on it. The irony is, that's the flight all of our bags got expedited to. So our bags are on the flight we want to be on, but not us.
But not us.
Right.
Yes.
Good and bad. On the one hand, we didn't have to drag the 11 bags around, which were big, cumbersome, and would have been a total nightmare.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. I mean, and that's exactly it. Like, you know, the weight limit, I think, is usually about 50 pounds. I think 9 of our bags weighed 48 pounds.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like we were all pushing the limit. They're all heavy. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, you want to be like, you're reading it and it says they've been expedited to Roanoke and you want to trust it, but you've had a very long day of travel and these are, it's not just like one bag, it's 11 bags and it's got all of your clothes and all of the camera equipment and all of the everything.
Yes.
And it's like, if I want to believe that they're going to arrive in Roanoke and that when we get to Roanoke, we'll just go to the airport and be like, where are our bags? Here are your bags. But like, nothing about traveling and dealing with airports leads me to think like it's going to be that easy.
That's the thing, is like in the world where we leave and then we were just too impatient to wait for our bags or something, which, you know, again, we'd already waited a pretty decent amount of time. But then you're starting to think like, well, if they have to ship these home to us, like it's going to be, I don't even know how many hundreds of dollars.
Oh, maybe even like 1,000, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like the inconvenience factor is starting to skyrocket.
Right.
Not to mention the fact that we have to book hotel rooms. So, you know, we've got our hotel room and it's actually hilariously, and this was by sheer coincidence, the exact same hotel that we had stayed at last time we were in Atlanta for Through the Griffin Tour Southeast.
Yes.
And so all of us had this like wonderful affinity for this particular hotel.
It continues to be the best hotel staff we've ever dealt with.
Yes. I mean, just like all of them, like the first go round, we were like, you guys are so nice.
So good.
I want to say, if you go back and listen to our post-tour episode from last year, we brought this up.
The Hilton Home to Suites in downtown Atlanta is a top-notch Hilton Home to Suites.
Yes. So shout out to the fine, lovely folks there. But so we walk in, you know, now it's 11:15 and we go up to the counter. And of course, because we've like booked late, online check-in was already a wash, couldn't do that. So, you know, we're going to do the thing. And, you know, at this point in time, this is our 7th hotel in the past, you know, 12 days or something like that. I've lost track, but you know, we're pretty acquainted with this process.
Yeah.
You know, like it all, you know, feels very, very routine.
It does.
But we walk up and because it's past 11, we've apparently like missed the window for our check-in. So, you know, like she goes to pull up the thing or whatever. And she's like, okay, you know, like I'm looking it up right now. And she's like, I'm going to see what I can do for you guys. Cause like, we're giving her our sob story or whatever. And so she says like, you know, I want to see what I can do for you guys. And we all kind of hear that as like,
is there like an upgrade?
Like a suite.
A suite.
I don't really know what a Home to Suites has in the way of suites because are already kind of suites.
Right. Yeah.
But either way, you know, it's like one of those things where you're like, oh, okay. And she's like, so here's the problem. I'm overbooked and I'm currently minus 7 rooms. And we're like, oh no.
Oh.
Like, and she's like looking at us like, I'm going to try to fix this. And it's like, oh no, like this is like, if we all of a sudden have like, you know, had a canceled flight, can't rent a car, and our hotel rooms are not in fact available,
right?
It's going to be like, That's a problem.
That's a problem.
That's a problem. Because it's, you know, the poor team is exhausted. We all just need food. Like,
yeah,
you know,
no one's had food because we've been stuck in the airport waiting for our luggage for the past hour.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so it's like, and everybody was being such a sport about it. I mean, this, it's like, you know, whenever you have travel delays and stuff, it's like, it's so easy to get frustrated. And, you know, huge shout out to our team for keeping their heads up through all this, because it's just like, you know, especially, I don't know how you felt, but like from my perspective, I was sort of like, I know it's not my fault, but I want to be able to fix it so they can get home to their families.
Same.
And also, I know we want to get home to our families. Yes. So we're doing everything we can. We're basically just saying, like, if it's expensive, we'll do expensive, but like, what gets us home? You know, and we're trying to, you know, solve all that. But so we get two of the rooms solved. She's like, okay, I got two of them. These are good. She's like, I'm still missing one. And then it's kind of like one of those things where like, it's like, that's still going to be really tight based on like this other person needing to have somewhere to go.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, crap. So we're trying to sort through all that. And then, you know, she's kind of looking at us, like looking at the computer and looking at us, looking at the computer. And I swear she just sees the desperation in her eyes. And she's like, okay, I got one. And she's like, I just really hope nobody comes in after you guys. and so all I can think is that she pulled from like the deep depths of the like hyper reserve room, break glass in case of emergency type situation.
Right.
Maybe if you work at a hotel, you can tell us if that particular...
if that lever exists.
That lever exists because it felt like it got pulled.
Right. Or like she gave us someone else's room.
Or that. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So we get the, you know, we get all the rooms, you know, figured out and everything. But then it's kind of like, okay, like let's go get some food. You know, we'll have a beer, you know,
yes,
decompress a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we had this like phenomenal evening with the team where misery loves its company and we were each other's company.
Yes. Yes. We went to the Metro Diner, which was like the only place open in downtown Atlanta on a Tuesday night or a Monday night.
Yes. And Waiter Dennis. He took phenomenal care of us.
He was great.
He was great.
Yeah. So we had fun there. That's sort of the thing though. It's like that born of these bad situations are often some of like the fun memories and stuff.
Right.
So we get there and, you know, we're all, you know, having a beer, having chicken tenders and patty melts, and we were playing the APT game from the Bruno Mars song. And
yes, yeah, which you've never done before. Very simply, the way that you do it is like it's like the ah-ba-da-ba-da. Yeah. So you're like, you kind of do this like hand wavy type thing, and then you say room.
Yeah, floor? It's like floor, yeah, like five or whatever. And then everyone puts their hands into the middle, and then whoever's hand is on the bottom, they go to the top, and that's one. And you repeat that until you get to the number called out, and whoever's hand that is has to like drink.
Yes. And then it rotates who gets to shout out the number. Right, so it just kind of goes in circles. So it's just sort of like a stupid little game of chance that gives you a reason to take a sip of your drink.
Exactly.
But it was really fun. We're all having a great time. There's like a saying that I think like humor is tragedy plus time. You know,
and so
I think in due course, once we're like more rested and further from the situation, this is going to be such a great story. And I, honestly, as we tell it right now, I'm like, I'm kind of already having fun with it.
Right. Yeah.
But you know, so then we get back to our rooms. We're all going to go, you know, have some sleep. But the car rental companies open at 8 a.m. the next morning.
Right.
So it's like we've all got our alarm set. First things first, you know, it's like we need to get up and start calling people. So, you know, right away, you know, we're on our computers.
I woke up at like, I slept so bad that night. I woke up at like 6 a.m. and I just had my laptop out and I was like checking every Hertz and every Enterprise and Priceline and Expedia and Kayak and, which supposedly, you know, check every rental car area in the area and we'll say, here's what's available or whatever.
Yes.
And literally, I mean, nothing was coming up. Like zero matches for your needs. Sorry about that. Better luck next time. Enjoy your stay in Atlanta.
Well, and that's the thing too, is that like, and I'm sure that anybody who's ever been caught in like weather and inclement, you know, travel situations, it's probably happening all over the country all the time. And maybe even for the people involved with these types of scenarios, it's like, yeah, it's kind of a busy day at work because a flight was canceled or whatever. But, you know, the big issue is that everybody's stranded in Atlanta. And so then the thing that they're trying to do is rent a car so they can drive home. But like one-way rentals are difficult for rental companies because it means that you're taking a car from their inventory and driving it clean to another state where it just is now.
Right.
You know, and it's sort of like, then it becomes a problem, you know, if you're all the rental companies in Atlanta, you're basically sending all of your cars elsewhere.
Right.
And then it's like, then what do? With just trying to reassemble their standard inventory. So yeah. They're basically just like, sorry. But then we're poking around. And finally I get like I'm like, okay, I can't find anything that's basically pick up today, return today or tomorrow. And then I was like, what if I just rent it for like 5 days? And
right.
It's like, I only need it for one. But
right.
But if what you need from me is like the money to justify me taking it to a different state, like at some point I'm just sort of like, this is our best case scenario. It would cost more to book flights. There aren't any flights. We want to get home today, which is like that. Even that becomes like a new layer to the equation. It's like, if you're going to be delayed by like 24 hours, how much
is that worth to you?
How much is that worth to you? Yeah. It's sort of like, you know, the rate at which we can get home. It's sort of like, you know, we get home in like 2 hours. It's like, how much is that worth? Getting home in 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours, getting home in comfort versus not getting home in comfort. Like you're talking about short-term suffering, but also at the end of this like marathon of being out.
Right.
So we're all just pooped, you
right.
know, like, so we get like a rental car pops up, and it was sort of like, okay, if I book it for, yeah, whatever, 4 or 5 days or whatever, it was like, it finally gave me a list.
It finally worked. And then I was working, and I tried booking through Uber, and I finally got some like cars to pop up, and I'm like, oh, maybe the rental places like have a deal with Uber, and they have like certain ones that are set aside specifically for people who book through this. And I just found like a back door.
Exactly.
Right.
Like maybe people are all going through the Hertz, the Kayak,
right.
they don't know Priceline or whatever. Yeah. So it's not going through Uber, which is a less traditional method of renting a car.
Right.
You know, booking a drive all the time. Yeah. But renting your own car.
But so each of us find a reservation, and we're like, let's just, you know, Let's keep them both active until one works.
Right.
Right. So Ben's was a pickup at 9. We head to that place. We walk right up to the counter, and the guy's like, oh, you booked it. Yeah, see your reservation. We don't have any cars. We don't do one. We don't have any for one way. And it's like, yeah, but it said one way right there.
Well, and that was the thing. He was like, going into the day, he was like, I had 20 cars booked. We have 7. 22 more came in overnight. So he was like, you know, if that's 43 cars and he had 7 available total,
right?
You know, he's like, that's 36 people who he's basically just having to be like, I know you have a confirmation number. I know all this stuff. However, unfortunately, there's nothing here.
Right.
So, you know, then I'm like, okay, well, like, can I just cancel my reservation? And he's like, oh yeah, let's do that. And you know, at this point in time, it's 9:02, and he's like, ooh, okay, so. Actually, since it's technically after your pickup window, I can't cancel it. And I was like, so what exactly does that mean? Because it's a pretty expensive rental. It's like, you know, am I going to be billed for a car that you guys like
didn't give me?
Like, yeah. Like don't have available. Yeah. And he's like, I'm not going to lie, that is a possibility. And I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Like,
oh no.
You know, it's like, I mean, I'm like, I know, you know, Miles, which is hilariously, that was the name of the guy working there, is Miles, for like cars, you know?
Yeah. Miles. Yeah. Oh, okay. Miles. Yeah.
Not over your head.
Yeah.
Told you, brain, speed of pudding. But you know, I'm like, Miles, I know it's not your fault. Like you are the person sitting here. There's like, I don't even know, 40 people in your like 300 square foot office right now, all of whom look angry, all of whom are on the phones. Everybody's
right.
got like luggage and look
kids
sad.
And yeah.
You know, it's just like, this sucks again for all parties. I know you don't want to have to tell me this and I don't want to hear it. You know, so we're like, crap. So then I'm trying to get like on the phone with like customer service, you know, that's a, you know, 15, 20 minute phone call of going through call log and AI answering machine and, you know, kind of speak to our representative. That representative had to send me to a different one. Finally, they can cancel it, you know, like whatever.
Right.
In the meantime, you're pulling strings on your end.
Yes. Meanwhile, I'm like, it's okay. We anticipated something like this might be the case. We have a backup reservation. Let me call that enterprise, see what we can, or that Hertz, I think is what we were
Hertz,
dealing
yes,
with.
Yeah,
yes.
Hertz.
I'm like, let's see if this will work. And I call, and that guy's name is Jonathan, which I felt like was a good omen.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
like,
hey, we have kinship.
We have the same name, you and me. We're the same.
We're the same.
And I'm like, I'm just calling to confirm my reservation here just before we like come over. And he's like, hold on, let me look it up. He's like, yep, I see it right there. And yeah, we don't have any one-way cars. And I was like, well, that's... And he's like, yeah, it's weird that it lets you do it. Did you book through like a third-party app? And I was like, yeah, I was using like Uber. And he's like, yeah, so that's probably why it like showed up, but like we don't actually have it. And I was like, oh, Okay, so I didn't find like a secret back door to a secret room or something. I just found a more hidden door to the same room.
Right, right. Yeah. Yes. A hidden door to the same room that is non-functioning.
That is non-functioning. So
out of order.
So great. But Jonathan was like, okay. But I would call these two other branches because they've got a little bit more. I can see here they've got more inventory. And I was like, I'm like, he just wants to get me off the phone. He can see that they have more inventory. I feel like if they had availability for my needs, you'd just tell me. But at least you can pass the buck now.
Right, you know? Right. Yes, you've sent me in a direction. The goose chase continues.
Exactly. So he gives me two names of other places. And I'm like, all right, I have no hope for this. But I'm like, Isabel, you call this one. I'll call this one. And we call them both. And miraculously, finally, both places actually had one. They're like, let me take your information. I'll hold it for you. And the real secret was like getting 30 minutes out of Atlanta, which for some reason Expedia and Priceline and everywhere were just like, that's what you expect. Why would we look there?
It's a very unusual problem. Yeah. Where it's like all these like search websites need like a find anything available with an X radius or whatever, because you know, we're at the point now where it's like, I mean, literally in my mind, I'm starting to near a scenario where I'm like, we are going to pay an Uber driver to get 1 hour north. We will get out at like a Starbucks or you know, Walmart or whatever, just somewhere obvious.
Yeah.
And then we will book another Uber.
We're gonna Uber hike our way home.
And Uber hike our way home. And basically we'll just keep getting a new car, going another hour north, because I'm assuming that's the outside limit. You know, however far they would be willing to take us, we'll do. You know, but it's like that's what we're up to. But they say we have a car, and it's kind of like, okay.
Okay.
So now keep in mind, we have five of us, and thank goodness we don't have that luggage.
Oh, I know, because then even just getting the Ubers to the rental car places would have been their own. Like when it was like still in downtown, it was like, okay, we could have Ubered regular, come back to the hotel. Now we're all getting in an Uber and going 30 minutes outside the city. Right. So it's like, if that was the case, we'd have had to have gone there, driven all the way back into the city in the wrong direction to pick up the stuff, and then go again.
But then in addition to that, we would have needed a vehicle that could have carried all of it.
Right.
Which, like, for what it's worth, like, when we're out on tour, we're usually using a 15-passenger van and using, like, the back three rows of that van to carry all the stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like, normally we have this gigantic cavity of space that we can, like, shove everything into. Now, it's like, when you're talking about, like, pedestrian vehicles, it's like most of them don't have that kind of space.
So
again, thank goodness everything was already going to Roanoke. All we have is our backpacks, because then we show up at the rental place and the vehicle they have for us was a perfectly great vehicle. It's a Jeep Compass, but it's like, it has seats for five people and cargo space for five backpacks.
That's what it has.
And it was like, and we were like all within 7 inches of each other.
Right.
You know, or if you were in like the back row with, you know, the team, they were just hip to hip, basically.
Right, hip to hip. And, you know, it's just a short 6-hour drive from Atlanta to Roanoke.
Yes, I think seven.
Plus stops and, restroom breaks and stuff.
Right, so then it's just like, okay, now we're off. So we were supposed to be there the night before. Ultimately, when it really all boiled down to it, we got home at like 6 p.m. So it was realistically like 18 hours after we were originally supposed to. But that 18 hours involved like so many hours at the airport, an hour for dinner, a hotel stay, 2 hours of tracking down cars, and then 6 hours of driving.
Yes.
I don't know if that math works, but that's approximately
whatever.
Happened.
Yes. And this was supposed to be our day off when we were going to be recovering.
Yes.
So instead it wasn't that.
Right.
Which was a real bummer. But we did arrive at the airport at long last, where we had to go pick up our cars, of course, because that's where we parked before we left, right, and our luggage, which thankfully had arrived at the Roanoke airport.
Yes.
And I was like, I didn't believe that was going to be true until I literally saw the bags. Like, I was certain that they were going to be like, oh, yep, I see what happened. They arrived here and no one picked them up, so we sent them back to Atlanta. You know, I was like, something stupid like that's going to have happened. And we're not going to have any of our stuff for like a week,
right,
while they ship it back to us for an exorbitant amount.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So we're going through all this stuff. It's all chaos, but fortunately, you know, we get all of our things and, you know, we get everybody back to their homes. And like, I know I was dropping off, you know, Isabel and Ethan on my way home from the airport. And I think like the moment that I knew that it was just free and clear, just like to like get back, you know, to Addison and Alice, I was just like, I feel like I like my tears were just welling in my eyes.
Right.
Like I was just like, oh my gosh, this has been, there's been so much resistance. I haven't even been able to fully let myself like embrace the total like amount of how much I miss them.
Yeah.
And so I'm like whipping around the corner in front of my house and I'm like trying to parallel park on the street in front. And as I'm doing so, Addison must have seen me like pulling around the front of the house because she's standing at the back door and she's like, Daddy! And I'm like trying to park the car. And then I look over again and she's like halfway down to me standing on like the top landing of like our steps and just like, Daddy! And I'm like, I'm trying to throw the car into park and turn it off. And it's like stuck in gear. And I'm just like, I just want out of my car as fast as possible. I rip open the door. I run to the gate and she just like slams into me.
Aww.
And I mean, at that point in time, the tears just flew.
I was like,
oh my gosh, I've got you back. And, it was so great. It was so great to just, to be reunited.
I know. Yes.
You know, it's just such a good feeling.
I know. It was very similar at my own house. I pulled up and, you know, I'm like dragging my suitcase in and like I opened the door and like Nate is like exiting the bathroom as I like get to the door and he's like, Daddy's home! And like all three of them just come like pelting forward and they like, you know, like I'm like can't even move. They're all like hugging me and stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I wanted.
Yes, yes. This is
the best.
This is the moment we wait for.
This is the moment.
But yeah, so then you know, like the even more, I guess, like comedic layer to the nonsense then is that like, you know, we're home at 6, we can have dinner with our families, all that type of stuff. But like at this point, we've missed our day off and we have like content deadlines at this
right.
point where it's like we have to get stuff up. And so it's like all we all want to do is just go and sleep for 24 straight hours.
Exactly. Yeah. Just go to bed.
But we have to come in and you know get stuff done. Which is fine. I mean, like, you know, that is what we do. It's
yeah.
no big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, we pull up and of course we gotta like unload all of our gear again, you know, to the office or whatever. But we walk into the office door this morning and it is 93 degrees.
93 degrees in the office.
In our office. Which, to be fair, when we take our mid-year break, there was one occasion where we were finishing filming in the afternoon. I think we've told you guys about like the loud hum of our air conditioner. So we turn the air conditioner off while we record.
Right.
And there was like one day right before our mid-year summer break where we were filming right up to, you know, the 11th hour and we forgot to turn the air back on and it was the dead of summer and we are on the top floor of a building. So the heat was just pounding down through, you know, July, you know, for 9 days or whatever while we're out. We come back and it's 93, 94 degrees in the office. This time we pull up, it's 27 degrees outside and 93 degrees in the office.
Right. And like, We set the thermostat. I checked it and I was like, what is going on? It's set to cool, you know?
Right.
And I'm like feeling the heater and I can only imagine that the same storm that stopped us from getting here tripped something somewhere.
Right.
And it is now not blowing cold air at all. The thermostat is reading that it's 93 degrees, so it needs to cool the room. But the only air it can produce is super hot air.
Yes.
So it is just blasting hot air into the room, which means that anything we've hung up with command strips, like in the office, has just fallen because the glue is melted.
All the glue is melted.
All the glue is melted.
All of our plants are dead.
All of our plants are dead. And like our, even some things that we had like nailed into the wall, like the anchors had like warped or melted or something. And like we, like our row of skateboards on our gaming set
fell off the wall. So like, yes. Yeah, we came in and there's just this like giant pile of, you know, skateboards.
Right.
And it's just like, no.
No. So you're having to deal with that in the middle of like now we're coming in and not only are you having to deal with it, but it's so hot.
Right.
Like it is so hot in here. We open all the windows. Thankfully, it's freezing outside.
Right.
So it cools off fairly quickly. But even now, if you're watching, you may have noticed that I took my cardigan off because it's like, it's cooler than it was, but it's still like 79 degrees in here.
Right. Yes. Yes. I mean, like, and to the point where like, you know, we went out to grab our lunch in the middle of the day or whatever. And it did not even occur to me to put my jacket on despite the fact it's freezing outside.
Right.
Because I was like, well, it's super hot.
It's super hot.
So, you know, we came downstairs and I was like, oh crap. So yeah, it's been like a whole thing, just trying to get like our wheels back on.
Yeah, and you're just like, you're going through all your emails and just trying to get your workspace ready for the day and trying to figure out everything you have to make. And on top of it all, we did the thing where like weeks ago, we agreed to do career day, you know, tomorrow for, you know, at the kids' school,
right?
Which I'm sure once we're there and we're doing it, it will be great and it will be fun. But in the meantime, it's just this whole extra thing we have to do tomorrow and that we have to prepare for today or the middle of doing everything else. It's going to take half the day tomorrow and we have to make so much stuff and it's so hot. All the batteries are missing because you can't put them in the checked luggage and it's Ethan's birthday, so he's not here, but he had the batteries in his bag. And anyway.
Yeah.
I'm just venting.
No, it's okay. I mean, yeah. I think the thing is that almost nothing that's gone wrong is anyone's fault.
It's no one's fault.
Like, it's like there's no one to be mad at. It's just sort of like, it's so funny because when I first started dating Alice, she used to always say like, oh, well, you know, Mercury's in retrograde or whatever. And I was always sort of like, oh yeah, like that's like a funny little silly thing. But she did text me this morning after I told her everything that happened. And she was like, Mercury is in retrograde. I was like, honestly, I could tell.
You know what? Don't need that update.
Yeah.
I can feel it.
I can feel it.
Mercury is bright tonight.
Yes, exactly.
Or not bright tonight, whichever retrograde means.
Whatever retrograde means. I'm not actually entirely sure at all. Mm-hmm. And amazingly, we have now spent a full, like, almost 40 minutes just talking.
I know. People are like, how was tour? Well, how was the travel back, you mean?
Yeah, that's, you wanted to know about
the last 36 hours.
Not all the glorious, wonderful, incredible people that we got to meet on the road or the insane venues we got to perform at or the inside jokes, you know, while we're in hour upon hour in the tour van together. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was such a, like I said, I mean, this whole story started where it was like, we were out on tour and things went so phenomenally well that it almost felt like the other shoe had to drop. Yeah. And, you know, I think the good news is that because we were in such great spirits anyway, it was almost like we were like made of rubber. Like we were like prepared for, like, we almost had like elasticity built in from all of the good. It was almost like, okay, yeah, we can do this, you know, like, and sure enough, we did, you know,
we got through it. And it kind of felt like, you know what? It's like, if you're going to tour that much, like eventually something like this is going to happen.
Yes.
And, you know, and now it did.
I think literally it may have just been like a recent pop. I'm trying to remember because it's now been weeks since we've recorded them. But I talked about that, like the operations management teacher. And he taught us how like 99% times 99% times 99% times 99%. It's like, if you have 50 components and they all have a 99% chance of success, that doesn't mean the entire system has a 99% chance of success.
Right.
It's like, if anything, it might be like 79% chance of success.
Yeah.
So it's like, you're starting to really reach a point where it's like, inevitably something won't work because that's just the odds, you know? And that's exactly how all this goes. There's so many reservations, everything's lined up on top of each other. You know, it all has to work in some manner of speak. And
right.
It was like, it reached a stage where this was going to happen. And even when you look across all of our other tours, it's almost amazing it hasn't happened before now.
I know. Yes, it is. It is. But you know what? It happened. We got through it and that was great. And in the meantime, we had an absolute blast on the road, traveling around the Southwest section of the country.
Yeah. I mean, we got to go to six incredible cities. You know, we kicked off with Denver. We had Salt Lake City, Las Vegas, Phoenix, Houston, and Dallas.
Yes.
And really, I mean, if you guys were at the show, if you came and saw us, like, I mean, thank you so much for being there. And if we're if you're living in a part of the country that we haven't been to or haven't been to in a while, not to worry, there's more to come. But yeah, I mean, it was just, it's just always so great to see this community come out in numbers and get to see them and hear their stories and the way they've interacted with like the stuff that we've made. The number of people who I feel like were there for a Through the Gryffindor show that were like, honestly, I'm like a pop person.
Right.
You
know,
it was sort of like, thank you for coming.
Thank
like,
you for coming.
Yeah, so that was really cool. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. 300 and some odd episodes into doing the pop, and I've started to realize something about Jay and I. Not as hosts, but as people. We frequently seek the need for permission to try something new, whether it's tattoos, growing a mustache, or finally starting that Name of the Wind podcast. And while it's funny to think that I didn't realize this before, I also get it, because starting something new is terrifying. Like, we should only do it on Halloween. So at least we can like be on brand for the occasion, right? And when it comes to launching a new business, like forget it. But Shopify is the tool to take you from the daydream you tell your friends you're considering over drinks to actually doing the dang thing. And if you're trying to figure out how to get the word out, no problem. Shopify helps you find your customers with easy to run email and social media campaigns. Plus, if you get stuck, not to worry. Shopify is always around with 24/7 customer support. You don't need permission. You're more capable than you think. And even if you do find something you can't do, chances are Shopify can. It's time to turn those what ifs into with Shopify today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/poppop. Again, that's shopify.com/poppop. One last time for safety, shopify.com/poppop.
That was really cool. And if you missed any of them, just like what we already have on the books in case you want to come see us, is that we are going to be in Madison, Alabama on Saturday, May 23rd for the Rocket City Trash Pandas game.
That's
where we're going to be doing another live episode of Through the Gryffindor because it's Harry Potter night at the Trash Pandas.
And here's the thing is that like when we're out there, and not to say that any one of the nights doesn't go spectacularly, but I feel like there's always something like first night magic and last night magic where it's sort of like the first night we're in there, like we're great. You know, it's like we get a full head of steam. We're ready to go. Energy levels are all topped up. And then last night magic is sort of like let's go.
Yeah.
You know? Like let's
finish it out.
Let's end on a high note. And I would say both of those things are absolutely true for both Denver, our first show, and Dallas, our last show. But the Madison, Alabama show, it's just one show.
One night. It's our first and our last.
So it's our first and our last.
Double
so
the magic.
Like, it's going to be like goodness. Can you imagine packing in that much excitement to one evening?
I know. And then you get to go watch a baseball game.
That's right. Yep. So be sure to check that out. We will be sure to link it in the description down below.
Yes, it will. And Ben, I think we should talk about the the craziest moments on tour was during the final show of the run.
Yes.
In Dallas.
Yes. So okay. The setup for this is that if you've ever watched Jay versus Ben,
yes,
we do the year-long competition.
Yes.
And basically that's sort of like, you know, obviously we're competing week in, week out or whatever, you know, in that particular episode, there's a winner every time or whatever. But going across the course of the entire year, we're keeping score of all of that. And then at the end of the year, we have like our big 12-hour episode.
Right.
And we do the same over each individual tour where each night, you know, we tabulate the score.
Right.
And then each night, each subsequent night, the crowd gets to see what the current tour long total is.
Yeah. What is the cumulative total for the tour?
Yes.
Yes. So we're going into the final evening of the tour. And I want to say you were up by 2 points.
I believe I was.
Yeah.
And it was like sheer miraculous territory.
Right.
Like, could not believe that we were, I mean, of course, I think that we were at like maybe 31 to 29 or something like that. And we had been asked like 50 questions. So our scores were about like a 60%.
Yeah. The Quizmasters came to play on tour.
They really did.
For sure.
They really did.
But that's okay. Cause sometimes us getting questions wrong on stage is still funny.
I also think at this point in time, there's like a funness that people have in stumping us. Like it's almost like, it's like, I'm not just here to get to ask you guys a question. I'm here to beat you.
Right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. But so we're going through, and somehow I managed to claw back to a tie and then even get the lead, lose the lead. I think you were winning again.
Yep.
And we got down to the very, very final question of the entire tour. And it was a question about the chapter we were performing that night.
Right. So it's 35 to 34.
Right.
I've got the lead. And the question is something that is literally that I, in a chapter that I've now read like 4 times in the past day.
Right. Right. And as soon as they read it, I was like, oh no, like I have no shot now. Like we've both just been aggressively reading this chapter, which was the last chapter of Order of the Phoenix. And they were asking, what did Hagrid serve Harry to drink when he went to go visit him while Ron and Hermione in the hospital? And I was like, I can't win because we both just read this chapter. Like there's no chance Ben doesn't know it.
Right.
And so I write the answer, which was dandelion juice. And we flipped the answers over and Ben wrote dandelion tea.
I can't believe it. Like it's like the thing was, I mean, I think it was just like, in reading the chapter, it's so rare that we get a trivia question from the chapter that we're performing.
Right.
And it's obviously like a phenomenal, like Dandelion Tea is certainly, it's certainly not the most common type of tea.
Right.
Or juice.
It's not even the most common thing Hagrid serves.
Exactly. It's like he's all, like you always go down to Hagrid's hut for tea. And, you know, so it was like, I was like, dandelion, you know, I was like tea, dandelion tea, you know, and it was almost like, I underthought the answer just because I was like, I know this, like, you know, but I was like, something feels off. And I was like, is it a dandelion? Am I like getting that wrong? And you know, it's like, we go to flip or whatever. And you're like, dandelion. I'm like, oh, I got it. Juice. And I was like, juice, dandelion juice,
dandelion juice.
How would you even juice a dandelion?
I don't know,
you know, but apparently you can, because the correct answer was in fact dandelion juice. And we are gridlocked at
35-35, a tie on the final question of the entire tour.
Yes. And yes. The thing about this is that, like, we were wholly unprepared for it. Like,
we were,
you know, the thing about being out on the tour, even just Jay typically being far better at trivia than me, is that you give it 60 questions and he's eked out a lead. Like, and, you know, obviously this tour was a mild exception to that or whatever, but you know, it was like, we didn't have a tiebreaker plan.
Yeah.
We weren't expecting that to happen.
We were not. And it's, and like, the thing is, we've ended nights before where it's like, okay, the cumulative total, like, yeah, someone's in the lead, someone's losing. But on the night, who is the champion of the night? Like, we've tied on that plenty of times.
Right. Yes.
And we have like a whole bit where we do like a jump contest and whatever, to see like, oh, who won? And it's just sort of like, then we jump and it's like, you know, whatever, who cares? It's just fun to watch us do that part.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Makes for a good photo.
Makes for a very good photo. And we can basically jump the same height and people just argue about it. And then it's just like, oh yeah, who won? Whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then it's just kind of like, let the crowd scream and, you know, we'll just sort of like go with whatever you guys say.
Yeah, exactly. So that's fun. Now, hilariously, in the middle of this very competition, we just stopped and did a jump contest, not for a point or anything, just for fun, just to like break up the questions.
Exactly.
Right. Yep. So we've already done that.
Yes. So then, you know, like, I mean, the crowd is sort of like, no, we're not ending on a tie. This is the end.
This is the end. You know, who's gonna win?
We need a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
You know, and so then all of a sudden, like, the crowd is like, you know, shouting out like, oh, do rock, paper, scissors, or like, do this, do that, do this. And then somebody goes, push up competition. And we were like, well, now hold on just one second.
Push ups.
Now hold on just one second.
Right.
Now that isn't a bad idea.
Yeah, no, because people were saying rock, paper, scissors, and I was like, that's not like climactic enough.
I right, yes, exactly. Like, it's the kind of thing where it's sort of like, especially for like the people in the back, you know, it's like, how much are they really
going to do?
So we're like, okay, we could push up competition. But you know,
that's how you solve a trivia tie.
Exactly. With sports.
Exactly.
So then it's like one of these things where you and I think are both sort of like locked in on like a completely different gear all of a sudden. So it's like the watches are coming off, sweaters and jackets.
I know,
are
yeah. We're off, like wearing like our tour stuff, which is like kind of like, yeah, you're wearing like a jacket, like a blazer. And yeah. I've got like this like nice sweater on, and I'm like, I'm not going push-ups in the sweater.
Yes. And so it's like, okay, well, this is about to go down. So then we had two people come up from the audience, you know, and they were both our counters for us. And it was basically just like, go till failure. And your counter will count. And so, like, you know, I'm going, you know, like in my head, I'm sort of like, one, like, I'm just sort of like doing like a rough count in my head or whatever.
Right.
So in my head, I was like, I think I'm at like upper 40s, maybe crested 50 or whatever. And so then, you know, we both pop up, we both hit failure.
Yeah. I'm personally like, I just completely closed my eyes and like, I started out counting. And at some point I was like, don't even worry about the number. You'll get in your head about the number. Just literally go until failure. And I mean, I could not have anticipated the crowd on this either, because everyone is like cheering so loud.
Yes.
Like, for like the J's and the Bens, and they're just like, oh my God. I think everyone was also a little surprised that we could do push-ups.
There was a huge amount of people after the show that were like, I never would have guessed that was like something that you guys would do.
Right.
And you know, I mean, then in the meantime, like while we're doing it, the sound girl Layla, shout out, played like Eye of the Tiger.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
Dun, 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 dun.
Was just like good music, good cheering, and there's like the people on stage, and I'm just like, I'm literally, all I could think was just like, just keep going. And Like, so yeah, we get to the end. I cannot barely move my arms.
Yes. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. Just like, I mean, I am like, it's now like we did this on Sunday and it's like, if I press like the upper part of like my pecs, it's like, I can still
right.
feel like the residual like soreness.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like we went till failure. Like, you know, it was something.
Yeah.
But so then you look at your counter's name was Benji.
Was
right?
Benji, which was also a funny thing because there's this kid in the audience and his name was Benji, and he asked the first question of the night, and he comes up and he's like, "Oh, my name's Benji, and I'm a J fan." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, thank you so much." And then I felt so bad because like the other bit I do every night is on the back of the whiteboard. It says
no bends allowed.
No bends allowed. Do not touch or whatever.
Yes.
I'm like, oh no. Like, and then I'll ask the audience, like, it's obviously like a joke, like Ben's not allowed to touch my whiteboard or whatever, but I'll usually ask the audience, like, are there any other Bens here? Okay, you can't touch this or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, yes.
And I hadn't done the joke yet.
Right, right.
So now I'm about to be like, oh no, Benji. So I had to, like, then we had to do the joke a little bit early and I was like, don't worry, I'm breaking the rules. Benji, you can touch my whiteboard.
Right.
So he got to do that. So I called him back up to be my counter.
Yes, there yeah. you go. Yep. So then, you know, I picked someone who was raising their hand excitedly.
There you go.
Yeah. So we've got our people up there. We're going to town. Everything's going great. We both hit failure and it's time to reveal numbers.
Yes. So we go to Benji first and he says, Jay did 51.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, oh no, oh no. And so I look over at my girl and she's like, 49. And I'm like, no, I can't believe it.
I could not believe it either.
Oh my gosh.
First of all, I couldn't believe when he said 51 because I was like, I have done push-ups to failure before and I don't think I've ever broken 50.
Right.
So like the absolute eye of the tiger, crowd noise, adrenaline of it all was like so obvious.
Oh my gosh, I know. Well, and the thing I was thinking of immediately too was like, you've always told the story about like when the Cirque du Soleil performers came to the Berglund Center.
Yes.
And like, you know, they're out there doing their thing and they're so fired up on adrenaline from performing and doing like everything. They immediately walk backstage. They've got weight benches waiting for them.
Right, like right behind the curtain.
To just like hit reps while they're just like absolutely like jazzed.
Yeah.
And they can lift more than they ever could, you know, under ordinary circumstances or whatever. And so I was like, oh my gosh. So like that was obviously like coursing through
clearly.
Us. And you know, so it was just like, ah, it was so close, but I loved it too, because that meant like across the entire tour, we were fully tied on trivia. It came down to the very last question.
Yes.
To determine it. The last question was the difference between dandelion tea and dandelion juice.
Yes.
Which I feel like if we weren't covering like in that specific chapter, like
right.
if it was June,
on the set. Yeah.
Like, I think we easily would have been like, that counts.
That counts, like, right. You know, like, it's dandelion drink.
Dandelion drink. Like, the right. dandelion part's the hard part because it's such right. an unusual beverage
right.
substance.
Like, if it wasn't so much on the line, we probably would have been more lenient on the answer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, it was like, okay, you know. It's like, it came down to that. And then it's like, okay, push-up competition. And even then, it came down to two push-ups.
Right.
Both, you know, so it's just like, it could not have been like a more climactic,
yeah.
like nail biter, buzzer beater type of like finish.
I know. Yeah. The final Jay versus Ben was such an amazing memory from the entire tour.
It
yeah.
was, it was. So any of those people who saw us at any of the other nights, it's like, that's how it ultimately shook
that's
out.
That's how it shook out and how it ended. And yeah, that was super fun. I think I will always remember that. Yeah.
I know. The thing now though is I'm sort of like, oh gosh, is this gonna be like a precedent that we've set now? If
oh,
people
no.
see us die, they're gonna be like, push up
cup! Push ups. Oh my gosh.
Like, oh boy, I'm gonna have to, you know, really, you know, put in some more
start hitting the gym, start hitting some bench.
That's right. That's yep. right. Be prepared.
I know. This is like, I always wonder, because like you're right, like did people, because people seem surprised that we could do like so many push ups.
Yes.
Like I always wonder, like, do people like, because we cover like Harry Potter and stuff, like what is the perception of our like, athletic abilities, which right. is apparently very low.
Very low. Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's, I don't know, like it's so funny because like I used to have like my like rock climbing days, like in the yeah. very early beginning of like when Super Carlin Brothers was like becoming real. And like my whole quest then was to do like American Ninja Warrior. And
right.
I think the threshold I'd hit for myself was doing 5 one-arm pull-ups.
Right.
And like when I go back and look at pictures of myself then, I'm like, okay, you were athletic then.
Right. Yeah.
So on some level, I think I'm sort of like, I don't know where I would clock myself at this point, but
sure,
can do approximately 50 push-ups at once.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
In case anybody's
pretty good.
In case anybody's ever just randomly like, you know, running into you on the street and you're like, hey, quick podcast you listen to. How many push-ups?
How many push-ups do you think the hosts of other podcasts you listen to can do? That's my question to you.
Should we just like put this out into the world, like as like a competition, and like literally just be like find any other content creators we know and be like, here's the quest.
Okay. Absolutely. Listen, everyone listening, go like send a message to all of your other podcast hosts and be like, how many push-ups can you do?
Right.
We need to know. We need to know which podcast host can do the most push-ups.
And then whoever it is, then we have to you know, be like, okay, now it's on.
Now it's on.
Now it's us versus them.
Now it's us versus them. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going down as far as I can tell.
I love how lately we just keep like calling out people as like competitive angles.
Yeah. Like Oliver Phelps. He's going down.
Oliver Phelps, aka George Weasley,
from
the Harry Potter series,
yeah,
has been like our quest for like the cameos,
our cameo rival,
which has been so much fun. I can't believe the number of people who have signed up and they're like, just take down Oliver Phelps,
you know,
which is so funny. It's just sort of like it's hilarious.
In fact, you know what you can do is you can contact Oliver Phelps and be like, how has the Carlin Brothers quest to defeat you on Cameo affected your daily life? I want to know.
Also, how many push-ups can you do?
And how many push-ups can you do?
Actually, I think the Phelps twins are both very athletic. So
I think they're quite good golfers too.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So there's a good possibility they could take us down.
There is a possibility. Speaking of golf, there is something funny about golf in terms of us going on tour, which is that in our regular lives, we play zero golf.
Yes.
But if you only knew us from tour, you'd think we play a lot of golf.
Yeah, well, probably not based on where the ball goes.
Nope.
But based on the frequency that we're like, we need something to do. And that something is almost, with every tour I think so far has included a Topgolf excursion.
If at least one.
At least one. I think one tour had two.
Yes. And there's also been putt-putt. And now there's also been Virtual golf,
mm-hmm. Which I would say, okay, so like when you go to Topgolf, like there is such a social element to it. The game, the way that the games score everything is like almost silliness. Like,
right, right.
Because, you know, it's sort of like you could have somebody go up there and like absolutely like whale the ball into the back net like 5 times in a row and score fewer points than like a awkward chip shot off of the green where the club hit the ground first and the ball sort of like haphazardly bounced
into the right scoring zone.
So yeah, not everything is like equal. And, you know, it's sort of just like, it's just fun because it's like a great big open area. So like, even if you don't hit it straight, you don't really think about the fact that you didn't hit it that straight.
Right, because you can miss well at Topgolf.
You can miss well, and it will still hit something potentially relevant.
Right.
So then we go to a golf simulator one day, you and I do.
Yeah.
To just go and sort of like stand in front of one of those screens. And so basically you're in this like it's almost like a small home theater like box.
Right, with a projector.
With a projector, a giant screen in front of you. There's like a laser that points on the ground to like tell you where to put your ball and like the tee. And then you just whack it, and based on like your overhead like club speed and how you connected with the ball and like where it hits the screen in front of you,
yeah,
it then like projects you as like a like how far the ball would have gone and which direction it would have been in. And then the courses all have like sand traps and water and, you know, all the stuff that you would need. And that was like so humbling.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. When suddenly you're like just you'll hit the ball and it's like, oh, I hit it a little to the left and that put me a bazillion yards away. Great. Cool. Good.
Good. Yes. Good. Yes. Yes. Yep.
And you're like, and it gives you like slow-mo shots of you like striking the ball with the club. And you're like, wow, I'm terrible at this. I guess the ball went forward because it was hit with force, but not because I hit it anywhere on the club that made sense.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. I struck it. That doesn't mean I hit it where it was supposed to be hit.
Nope.
Or with any grace or follow through or any of those types of things. So yeah, it was very funny. But like, where do you stand? Because I feel like we came home from last tour or maybe a couple tours. I don't even know when it was. And it was like, I was like, maybe I'm going to go buy like my own set of clubs, go to the driving range. Because honestly, it's just like splitting wood for me. It's like, I could just go to the driving range and just like...
Just whack balls, just, man.
Yeah. It's just like, it's the cathartic release of like swinging something rapidly. Like, or even like, there's like those destruction rooms where you can go in and like take a baseball bat and like smash plates and stuff like that. Or like old TVs or I don't know, just junk. And part of me is like, I would love to do that. But then again, this is almost, it's like merging like kind of a fitness angle and something you could,
absolutely a fitness angle
and something you could get better at.
Yes.
And, you know, and it still gives you that same like repetitive whatever.
Yeah. Yes. Like, do we want to go play golf? You mean?
That's the question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would absolutely go play golf. Yeah. Okay. That'd be super fun. I mean, this is like one of those things where it was like, when I worked at the concert venue for all you bingo players out there, I remember one day, like my boss came in and he's like, "Hey, we're going golfing this weekend. You want to come?" And I was just like, "Yep." And then I said, "Yes, no questions asked." I didn't own clubs. I'd never been golfing before. And I left work that day and I went straight to like Dick's Sporting Goods and was like, "I need to buy golf clubs." like, of course I'm coming. Yeah. Cause like you can't miss out on, you know, golf with your bosses and stuff.
Exactly.
Or whatever. Yeah. Like, you got to be there for it.
That is definitely like one of those things that like growing up, it felt like if you're going into the world of like professionals, you need to learn how to golf.
Yeah,
like,
probably.
And maybe that's still more of a thing than I realize because we just don't really play golf. And we are also not exactly in like a world of professionals. Mm-hmm. At least we are all in the office, very good at what we do. It's a hyper non-traditional job.
Yeah, very, very non-traditional. Right. Yes. Yeah. But like I enjoyed going eventually, you know, I would just go with our buddies and it's a great way to, you know, spend a Saturday afternoon or
absolutely
whenever.
Yeah.
And you know, you just get to be in a well landscaped area and usually, you know, you have a beer or two or while you're out there and everyone's usually not great at golf, it turns out.
Right. Yes. You know? Yeah. So there's not a whole lot of, and maybe there's even like a nice sweet spot in there where it's like, if everybody's just kind of like learning and everyone sort of sucks, it's sort of like, oh, this is funny. We're all just like laughing and having a good time together. But then if you started to like crest into like, we're all a little competitive, it's sort of like, okay, now it's on.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, don't talk to me until I've already swung the ball.
Right.
Like I need full focus here.
Full focus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I would absolutely love to go golfing. And the other thing I would love to go do again that we did on tour was go-karts.
Oh my gosh.
Because man, when we arrived in Las Vegas, obviously the first place we went was In-N-Out Burgers. Yeah.
Yes,
we stopped there.
Naturally. It was really close to the hotel.
It was right next to the hotel and we were starving, so we got that first. But the second place, obviously, that we went to was go-kart racing.
Yeah. And it was like the high-powered, I want to say 40 by a mile an hour.
I think that was like the top speed was it could get up to 40, 45.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is really interesting because like, if you guys have heard us talk and I know some people, you know, it's really fun when we're on tour because there's almost like a new, like Isabel always, cause she's the one who takes photos during like the meet and greet. She always knows that there's two things that people can talk to us about that are going to completely
it's like, cause when you're doing the meet and greet, you want to like spend time and talk to people and like give them their moment, let them ask whatever questions. But like also bear in mind that we only have 1 hour to talk to 60 people.
Yes.
So the clock's ticking.
Yes. And normally it's like, it sounds like you get like 1 minute per person, but plenty of people come with multiple people. So it's like, you know, you meet like four family members at once or whatever.
Right.
So like things end up working out just fine.
Yeah.
But there are two things that if you get us talking about, it's almost like we can't shut up. And then like Isabel's like, you guys are the problem.
Right.
It's like you go for too long. And it's one, Name of the Wind, and two,
Formula One.
Formula One.
Yeah.
And so Formula One is something that Jay and I and like, you know, our family have like all kind of been like getting into together.
Yeah.
And the kids have been building like Lego sets with dad. And
our, you know, dad's been getting into it.
Yeah. So, you know, everybody's got like their own drivers. Hilariously, none of us have picked the same people, which is also kind of fun.
Luke is jumping on the George Russell train, with dad.
So he's with dad.
I'm going to try and convince him to do Kimmy instead.
I think that's a great idea.
Because I would much rather root for Kimmy than George.
George is unfortunately on like a lower list of my my driver rankings.
Yeah.
Not because he's not exceptionally good, but it's just not my favorite.
Yeah.
But anyway, so like it's been like one of those things that like when the drivers themselves are on their path to Formula One, you may wonder, like, you know, if you're a professional soccer player, football player, it's like you probably start in like some version of like a rec league, and then you join maybe like a travel version,
right,
or like school ball or whatever, you know, like,
right,
somewhere where the coaching staff is a little bit more sophisticated and there's like an obvious like pipeline, and like kids with skills get, you know, recognized and like put into more competitive environments, or like it's prioritized, you know, to whatever, there's camps, right, there's all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if you're a Formula One driver, one of the things that might not be obvious is sort of like, what happens
when you're a kid?
And the answer to that is kart racing.
Go-karts.
And so like the, you know, there literally is like a full-blown sport attached to karting. And this is like Mario Kart looking carts,
right,
but you're wearing like a full helmet,
right,
and you know, like body armor, and you know, some of them like you have to shift and they go like 80 miles an hour if not faster, and like you are absolutely whipping,
right,
and it is such an early indicator as to like what talent will look like as you progress,
right,
into, and then I think I want to say there's like Formula 4, 3, 2, 1 is like the pipeline, and like Formula E, which I think is something else. But none of that's really that important. But the idea here is that like this is where all these drivers who we now really love come from. So getting to go out there and do like high powered karting, it's like when I was a kid and I did go karts, I basically put my pedal to the metal and then just drove like. I never used the brakes.
Right.
And most of them were not that fast that you really even like needed to.
Right. Steered around the turns.
These carts are fast enough that like if you don't slow down appropriately for the turn, you will drift.
You're going to hit the wall or you're going to drift.
And,
yeah.
And drifting loses speed,
right,
because you've lost the coefficient of friction,
right,
with the ground.
Now you've got to speed up again.
Then it has to recover and you have to speed up. Yeah. So it's like being able to finesse the vehicle, and of course this is still pretty recreational, all things being equal.
Yes, but it's certainly like, it wasn't like when we were growing up, there was this place in Rocky Mount called Grand Slam Batting Cages, and they had like a go-kart thing, and it was the best thing ever, except that it was like the number two car is just faster, you know?
Yeah, precisely.
Right.
Yes, yes. It was sort of like, you know, if you got loaded into that one, it's like they're not all built equally. They're probably maintained by, you know, high school students who are working like a part-time job. You know, it's not like,
right, yeah,
it's not that sophisticated.
Not really that maintained. You know, you can have pedal to the metal the whole way and like not really worry about the brakes or anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
This was different. And this was like having like your racing line, you know, which is basically like the most ideal place to put the vehicle to give you the best like entry angle into each of the turns. The vehicles didn't have like power steering or anything. So like turning
was like an effort.
It was like, I mean, when I go rock climbing, for example, or like weightlifting, you start to build like calluses at like all the little like creases in like your fingers and right where your fingers meet like your palm and stuff like that. And it's like, I finished the races and I had like all my calluses were like fully like,
wow,
on display.
My hands were like shaking afterwards from like gripping it so hard.
Yes.
And like turning, and like the whole thing is like the whole car is shaking the whole time you're doing it, you know?
Oh yeah.
Like while you're going. But oh my gosh, if I have done anything more fun in the last like 6 months, I don't know what it is. Because what it really reminds me of now that I think about it is skiing, in terms of like what I used to love about skiing so much, besides just like, you know, going fast down the hill and like everything, was that like mentally you can be nowhere else. There, like if you are skiing, you are only focused on like getting down the hill, controlling your body, being fast, like not falling, avoiding people. Like you have to be present because you're going fast.
Right.
Right. And same thing. It's like your mind cannot be wandering whilst you are racing around the track.
No.
Your mind is locked in. Everything is just what's in front of you. You are so present when you're doing it.
You are. Yeah. Yes. And you know, so we get out there, we're rip roaring through it. We're having just like the absolute time of our lives. We get to the end, all of us go and like hop out of our cars or whatever, take our helmets off, and we're all just dripping sweat.
I mean, yes.
I mean, and so like they talk about it all the time, like during the F1 races, but like they're like, these guys lose like 6, 7, 8 pounds of water weight, mm-hmm, during the race just from sweat.
Right.
And it's like they're in these were fully electric go-karts. Those guys are like in vehicles that have like engines that are hot. They're outside in the elements, which is hot.
They're wearing like long sleeve track suits,
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Fire impervious suits.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, they've got like all this stuff going on and they're racing for, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours or whatever.
Right.
So it's just
traveling
like,
at 170 miles an hour.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Basically driving a literal rocket ship.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, getting to the end of these races, which took like, I don't know, eight minutes or something.
8 minutes. Yeah.
You know, it was just like, I mean, I had like cotton mouth. Like, I mean, I needed like a water. I was trembling. I was like,
yeah,
I was like, holy crap. It was so fun. So I literally like I texted Alice and I was like, if we had one of these near home, I would be there. Like it would be like bowling.
It'd be better. Yes. I would be there all the time.
I don't know what the monthly pass is or how much it costs or how much I could lower the average race to or whatever. I'll pay it. I want to be doing that.
We will be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was great was that like, sometimes you're like, well, if all the cars are the same, you know, how, like, who's really, like, what does it even mean to be, like, a better driver? Like, they all go the same speed, and it's right. It's like, you figure out immediately what makes you faster around the track. Because if they can all travel the same speed, how is anyone getting so far ahead of each other? And it's like, those little racing lines you're making, easing the car into the correct spots you're never drifting, like, it makes such an immediate big difference.
Right. It's like, what you're trying to do, it's like, realistically, it probably wouldn't be that hard to run a lap within, you know, plus or minus, let's say like 1 to 2 seconds of each other. So like if average lap time is 1:26, like realistically doing a 25 or 27, it's like maybe you would just hammer those off one after the other. But if you can compound like successful laps where it's like I went 0.5 seconds faster that time, then it's like over the course of 12 laps, you're talking about beating the person behind you by 6 seconds.
Right.
You know, and it's like you start to understand the chess game of racing isn't just like, you know, gripping the steering wheel and, you know, wheel to wheel racing. It's like there's so much more.
Right.
And that's
under ideal conditions that like no one's in your way. You have to drive around people or consider the person coming up from behind you or any of that.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So it was really, really cool. I mean, it's like it definitely shone a light on like one of those things where it's like, is this like, I don't know how to pursue it. I wouldn't even know where to start.
I know, but it was like, it was so fun. I loved it so much. I'm like, I got to find somewhere to take the kids to go-karting like around here.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. I think it would be a really neat one to like explore a little bit further and just see what it looks like, you know, because there's so rarely American F1 drivers.
That's true.
You know, it's like maybe like, you know, maybe Addison and, you know, Nate can be like the,
oh
the,
man, you know, that'd be amazing.
Right. Yeah.
Addison, first female F1 driver. Look out.
I don't know. Max Verstappen, who was my driver, just had a daughter like last year.
Yeah,
so
she's probably going to be pretty involved in that.
I suspect that she will have good mentorship.
Right. Yeah. Yep. I suspect.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so I mean, just a phenomenal trip. Like we say, I mean, you know, these things are they're so great. Like Jay mentioned kind of at the beginning of the episode, like you come home and your cup is just like full. And, you know, we do talk about this. If you ever come and see us, like there is something to knowing that like you guys, if you're listening, you hear our voice right now. Like the fact that actually it's never easy to know from where we're sitting who's hearing it and what it means to them. But then like when you get to go meet the people and they can tell you, it's like, okay, this has value that's like hard to put like your finger on. Because if you're listening to our voice in the pop, it's not like there's any one topic. It's like you and I talk about this before. It's like if somebody even said like, oh, you do a podcast, like what's it about? It's like, I don't really know what it's about. Like
our lives.
It's like we're dads, husbands, philosophers. We read books. We talk about Harry Potter. Like,
right.
You know, like I use the word philosophers. That feels like we're giving ourselves too much credit. We ask some philosophical questions that we attempt to answer with,
right,
you know, varying levels of astuteness.
Sure.
But yeah, so I mean, it's just, it's chaos, but at the same time, it seems like there must be enough of a through line that it means something, you know?
Right.
out there.
So. Hopefully we're just, you know, a comfort to some people.
That's right. That's right. So shout out to the little kernels of the world.
Yes.
But with that being said, I do think we have reached the end of today's episode. But as ever, if you guys have any feedback for the show and you want to send that over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com, we always love to hear from you. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. But otherwise, until next time, pop, pop. Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishawn Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.